a radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Gallant.
That's a G,
yo. And George.
Thanks, Joe.
Okay. Yeah.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
Happy Friday. Welcome into Gallant George on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Sean Mabes off for his birthday. Thinks he's too good for us. Doesn't want to celebrate with us.
A real man works Disrespect. On his birthday.
I agree.
Like me. Real man.
Yeah.
The manliest of all the men.
Sean Mapes, not a real man.
Not about that life.
Not about that life. We're going to celebrate next week when we're in La Berge, though. We're going to enjoy it. I don't know what's going to happen to Sean. I kind of want to make him eat that death burger that Brian McDonald ate. So that's his punishment.
But a
I
think, death burger?
Yeah, it was like super, super, super spicy. There was Carolina Reapers and everything in there.
Oh, that sounds terrible.
Yeah, it's not for me either. I don't know why anyone would order it. I told the chef that. I was like, I don't know why it's on your menu.
I think Conan O'Brien could handle it. Did you see Conan O'Brien on the Wing Show?
I did.
What a psychopath.
I kind of want to do like our own version of the Wing Show. I just don't
yeah,
know what
it is. I don't.
No, maybe not like not hot wings, but like I don't know, maybe like a barbecue version of it or something like that where we have conversations and you just eat brisket.
It's pool season, sir. I'm trying to look hot so I can find a wife.
Well, you don't have to be on the show.
Okay, good. Do this on your own, okay? I need my abs back because I need to demonstrate my value so I can enact the dentist system.
To make sure that you're okay going forward, you know, to find that wife.
Yeah, exactly.
Such a priority for Paul Gallant.
If I have abs, it's the implication.
So the Astros obviously didn't play last night. Justin Verlander back on the mound for the first time this season versus the Washington Nationals. But it's draft season. And it is Texans meeting with the media season. And in the next segment, we got to talk about these leaks because people are not happy.
It's pretty funny that for all of the leaks we didn't get before the Texans drafting with the second overall pick last year, the Houston Texans, when it comes to the uniform reveal that was supposed to happen at the NFL draft, they're literally down to just one item, which I believe also was leaked this morning.
There's like little details that are not leaked yet.
It's just the red helmet. The red helmet. Well, I'll just say it with a horn on the side of it. So I've heard.
Yeah, there is. So we'll deep dive into the hate that it's getting in the next segment. But the Caserio, Will Anderson, D'Amico, CJ, they've all met with the media this week. And for the most part, in typical offseason fashion, it's a whole lot of nothing. Like you, Paul, I do find it interesting that Joe Mixon met with the media, and I believe Danielle Hunter met with the media, but Stephon Diggs has not met with the media here in Houston. I just find it intriguing that he's not made that public appearance yet for the Houston Texans.
I don't feel entitled to a Stephon Diggs press conference because press conferences are generally boring, but Stephon Diggs is already the most interesting member of the Houston Texans. He is outspoken. He is somebody that is coming from a situation where it seems there was drama that led to him leaving the Bills and joining the Texans. And he's the newest Houston Texan.
Yes.
So it is a bit surprising.
And the splashiest Houston Texan edition.
Perhaps ever.
Yeah.
So it is surprising that we haven't heard from him. Maybe that's a request he made. Totally fair to do it. I'm sure he's annoyed with all of the attention that he's kind of created for himself when it comes to the end of his time in Buffalo and now joining the Texans. Maybe the Texans felt that, okay, we're going to try to make him seem like he's just one of the guys on the team. But it is weird that with Danielle Hunter and Joe Mixon, they didn't do that.
Yeah. And it probably is a lot about nothing. To your point, it probably is just like, yeah, I don't want to deal with this right now. I don't want to be peppered by the media of questions about what went wrong with Josh Allen, about saying on Twitter that Josh Allen wasn't good before he got there. It's curious. But Nick Caserio, when he met with the media, there was a couple things that stood out to both of us because both these clips stood out for you, and then I listened to them as well, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. We'll start here with Nick Caserio, who he got a little snappy when asked about big names in the Houston Texans.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't really know what that means. I think, you know, when you put the team together, you look at the opportunities that are presented in front of you. You have X number of dollars that you have available to you, and it's all about resource allocation. So, I mean, what, Devin Singletary, was that not like a big enough name last year, I guess? So, again, we're looking for good football players with the right mindset that come in here, espouse our philosophy, and then ultimately have to go out there and perform and play football.
He's such a nerd. I love it, though. He's a football nerd.
I love resource allocation because it's always been – it was something he would say a lot in the last two off seasons before this one when the Texans wouldn't do anything. He'd be like – and he would use that as a reasoning why the Texans would do nothing and that it – or it wasn't time, whatever excuse he wanted to make. But, yeah, a little snippy there. I don't know why.
I like it.
I do, too, but just
– it is, though, in a way, him defending his team. What? Devin Singletary isn't a big name.
Because, he's not on the team anymore.
Look, for us, we talk about sports on a daily basis. We look for the big names because generally people want to hear us talk about the biggest stars mm-hmm. in sports. But for someone like Nick Caserio, it's his job to look at everybody on the roster and look at what they can do and what they can't do. So the idea of big names, it is beneath him. And I like that he responded in that way. I'm sure some people are rolling their eyes at him. But you know what? I feel like with Nick Caserio, if we trust Nick Caserio, like some of you people claim, except for, oh, no,
when he does anything,
he got rid of the end of the Stephon Diggs contract. Oh, no, he sucks again. He drafted C.J. Stroud and Will Anderson and Nico Collins, uh-huh. among others. But whatever. Forget all of that. I feel like if he's going to push back like this, instead of saying, oh, who does he think he is? I'm going to say, cool, I like it. It's more interesting yes. than anything he says at his press conferences.
100%
Which are so boring. And look, nothing against him. But
how boring are they, Paul?
Joe, I told you about how I do this with every Nick Caserio press conference because it just makes me laugh. What I do is I copy and paste some of the answers into a Microsoft Word document because at the bottom of the Microsoft Word document, it'll show you how many words were said. Can you guess how many words Nick Caserio's opening statement was? Just guess.
450.
1,263. That's amazing. This guy can filibuster with the best of them. Imagine your opening statement is 1,263 words.
Mm-hmm. Of nothing.
Double spaced in Microsoft Word. Say we're doing an English paper again. Uh-huh. You got to do the double spaced. Double spaced. That's 2.5 pages. If you go a little crazier and do the cheat trick that everybody used to do. Where
the double spaced after the period?
Yes, exactly. Where you make the period a slightly bigger font.
Yep.
Oh my God, we're at 3 full pages. With yep. the opening statement, what Nick Caserio says is generally nothing. So I like that he's kind of being a dick
yeah.
at the beginning of these press conferences or at the end, when he's answering these questions. Because, yeah, we think about big names, but he doesn't think about big names.
Yeah, here's Nick Caserio again with the media the other day. He was hot and bothered by being asked about bringing divas to the Houston Texans.
Number one, I don't even know what that definition means.
Doesn't know what it means.
Again, like, we're not worried about, you know, again, we're worried about what a player does when he walks in our building. So we do our research. We talk to our players. We talk to other players all the time. We talk to our players, you know, as an example, like a lot of the guys are in the draft. And we talk to those players. Hey, what are your thoughts about so-and-so? What is your experience with him? So and we do our research, and then ultimately D'Amico and I sit and talk, and if we feel comfortable with the decision, then we go ahead and make the decision. I think it's unfair to label anybody until they actually have an opportunity to walk in the building. Again, our environment's different than another environment, so we really don't know what's going on in 31 other buildings. We know what's going on in our building, so excited to have stuff here.
I love that he's like, I don't know what that means.
I love it,
What
too.
Do you mean you don't know what that means?
I love it, too. He does know what it means. I mean, he was with the Patriots, and while the Patriots didn't deal with many divas, they did have Chad Ochocinco for a limited period of time. The 2011 team, he barely played for that team, but he was there. They had Randy Moss. There were some other players as well that pushed boundaries, definitely less than in most other organizations, but he knows what a diva is. He knows what we're talking about when we say that. But this is, once again, Nick Caserio standing up for his players. And how about this? I'm putting my fist up right now. It's unfair to label anybody. Damn. That sounds like something Jesus would say. You know? So, I like that Nick Caserio is sticking up for his guys. Yes, some of what he said there, kind of BS. Uh-huh. Doesn't know what a diva is. Okay. Nick, you're a wrestling fan.
Honestly, actually, like, using the Randy Moss example in that moment would have been a great one. Like, as like, it would have been a checkmate on the whoever asked the question. It's like, well, they called Randy Moss a diva when I was in New England, but then he got to New England and he set an NFL record in touchdown catches in a single season with a quarterback. Like, that would have been such a good checkmate in that moment. But I love the response to both of those questions. Being like, I don't even know what that means. What does it mean?
It's more than he gives us ever, and I will take it. Some people are like, oh, how dare you say that? Look, he's done a pretty good job the last couple of years cleaning up a mess that Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby left. And if he's going to answer the saying, I don't know what that is, fine, I like it. I like it. It's different. And he's shown a little, as opposed to Bill Belichick sneering at a question and giving more grunts and fart noises, like he's Trent Baalke, than words. Nick Caserio chooses to give us five-page English theses, but he starts them off by saying, at the very beginning, I don't even know what you're talking about. Yeah, I like it.
I do, too.
There you go.
And Fred here on the Twitch says, I can't believe Paulie likes the response from Caserio. You know what? What I've learned is Paul is team Nick Caserio.
Yeah.
Like, you are through and through Team Nick Caserio.
He's done a good job. Everyone was blaming him for stuff. And again, it's like this anti-Patriots bias. God forbid somebody tries to be the Patriots.
Oh, team that went to 9 Super Bowls and won 6. Why are the Texans trying to be them?
Okay. You idiots.
But to be fair.
That's what everybody should aspire to be.
But to be fair, every single organization in the NFL, from the Jets to the Titans to the Browns to the Texans, that has tried to become the New England Patriots, we'll also include the Broncos and the Raiders with Josh McDaniels, has failed miserably.
They brought in people that were never capable of actually doing that. But guess what? Every team should try to go to 9 Super Bowls and win 6.
Agreed.
Over a 20-year period.
Agreed.
That's what literally everyone should be going for. Mm-hmm. And it's funny that people are like, why are they trying to copy the Patriots? Because the Patriots win all the time, you dumbass. God, what are you going to say next? Oh, I can't believe people are copying the Chiefs, you know? And I know your Chicago Bears tried to copy the Chiefs. Was it so dumb of them to hire Matt Nagy? In retrospect, sure. He was with the Chiefs.
Hey, they made the playoffs once.
Yeah.
He won Coach of the Year.
He did.
And now they're drafting Caleb Williams.
Now the Chiefs are more Chiefsy now than when Matt Nagy was there. But hey, you get what I'm trying to say here.
He's also back with the Chiefs, so maybe they'll have to try it again down the road. Now, in typical Paul Gallant show fashion, this is not the only Nick Caserio we will hear from in this segment. I believe we also have a robot.
Correct. Listen, I'm a man of science. I went to Syracuse University, the most prestigious university in the United States of America. You know, it's not a party school. As though many will say that it is, because it was like number one in rankings. But while I was there, I developed a complex system that allows me to find the inner thoughts of people like Nick Caserio, who I believe may be a replicant or a Terminator. You take a look at that man. He hasn't aged in 20 years. Look at the shape he is in. Look at the way that he speaks with lots of analytical thought. He doesn't know what a diva is. He doesn't know what a big name is. He is a man of 10101111 going through his head, all binary code. And because of my genius, I have figured out what Nick Caserio was actually saying when he was asked about diva. Guys, thanks to the Nick Caserio robo-translator, here is what Nick Caserio was actually saying there.
I do not know what the word diva means. I do know about the vast amount of devastation that the great robot revolution of 2027 will bring to humanity. It was I who drafted C.J. Stroud. It was I who drafted Will Anderson. It was I who excommunicated Jack Easterby. And you dare ask me about divas?
Like what he did there. You hear that? He says, like,
he said the world's going to end in 2027. That's my biggest takeaway, that the robots are going to take over in 2027.
And he also said, devast, devastation. Yes.
But 2027.
He's cute.
We got 3 years left?
Well, hey, it's better.
That's all we got.
It was 2026 last time we heard from him.
Oh, so it's moving back.
I think he's realizing, well, I might have a dynasty on my hands here. So
every single year the Texans are good, the farther back he pushes the robot revolution.
Yeah. So we got to get a couple of Lombardi.
I'm glad that you're also tracking the robot revolution that Robo Caserio is about to incite on us. You know, I'm glad you know that it was 2026 and now it's 2027.
Mm-hmm.
It just makes me feel better. about life. All right, so yesterday was an interesting day on social media, on Reddit, on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. It started with a helmet. And then by the end of the day, Antonio Brown and CTESPN were breaking news about what the Texans leaked jerseys looked like, and people absolutely hate them. How do you feel? 713-780-3776. That's next on Glant and George on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
It's Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
ESPN 97.5 will be your home for NFL draft coverage in 2024. The only place in town to hear every single first-round selection on the radio is right here. ESPN radio coverage of the NFL draft starts next Thursday at 6 p.m. right after the Killer Bees. And then on Friday, when the Texans are finally on the clock, they'll have three picks that night. At the moment, we'll be doing our own draft show this year again. Paul, Dell, myself, and others will be on from 6 to 9 for our 2024 NFL draft show. So yesterday, the Texans' new helmet leaked, and then that was followed by very quickly, or not very quickly, but by the end of the night, all of a sudden, the Texans' uniforms have pretty much leaked. And they're very, very different than this uniform. That's duh, I guess. But what they're doing, they had such a traditional, boring uniform for so long, and they really have gone in a very different direction with their uniforms in 2024. People don't like them.
You said that so politically. I want to know what you think about them. You basically...
You said
they were traditional, and now they're very different. Is it better?
I don't know.
I think they're better.
I
know a lot of people disagree. I think you got to see the full array.
Yeah.
The ones that are specifically getting crushed the most are the one of three helmets, two new ones that they're debuting, where it has a light blue giant Old English H with a red outline on the side. A lot of people are saying it looks a lot like the Titans. Some people are saying it looks like an XFL or UFL team. I like it. I think it's different. There aren't many teams in the league that have just one letter or letters on the side. I think it's the Chiefs. It's the Packers. I don't know if there's many more. Kind of the Ravens have a B on the Baltimore Raven logo. The Bears have the C.
Uh-huh.
But for the most part, most teams have some sort of logo. They got a letter. They're repping the H.
Honestly, I hate the red helmet. That's my biggest issue.
What helmet?
The giant horn.
Oh, you hate that one?
Yeah, I don't like it.
Why? I think that's the best one.
I think it's so weird. I don't know. I like the H-Town blue jerseys. It looks like I'm
disappointed because I thought there would be more H-Town blue.
I thought so too, but
it's
Numbers. I like how it's double blue. It looks like the Houston skyline is on the side, on the shoulders, which I think that's a cool little addition to the jersey. I like that it's going to be the H-Town blue outline around the logo. Like, I'm not surprised. People don't like change, even when they want change. And honestly, the social media reaction was always going to be bad, to be honest. It's impossible for people to be happy. Like, that's part of it. No one's ever going to be happy. When does a uniform change happen in sports and everyone loves it? Like, you even have idiots who still think the red brick Astros jerseys were better than what they have now. Like, and they're so wrong. And that's like 90% of people agree with it, but there's people who love the red brick for whatever reason.
I'm sure there's some people who hated the Tequila Sunrise jerseys back when they wore them. But I'm sure some people felt that way. I'm sure some people were like, oh, these are kind of gay. You know, I feel like there would have been some people like that. Oh, rainbows on our jerseys? Come on, get out of here.
Yeah. And like, and Fuente says, how are fans who just play around with Adobe able to come up with cool stuff, but the team paid hundreds of thousands of dollars and never able to do anything? I mean, the fans were basically just taking the other jerseys and just making them all red. And that's what one of these jerseys is. The only real change is the helmet. Like, they're not that different in a lot of ways. Like, they are the same.
They're pretty much the same.
They're modernized. The traditional, the modern classic.
Different numbers.
The home road. Yeah, the numbers are different. It's one of those things where it's – my biggest is just – it was about time. Like, it was boring.
They needed something new. Before. They had nothing different for the first 22 years of their existence.
Mm-hmm.
They had the same helmet, the same exact jerseys. They did add a red one, but they went with the same thing for a long period of time. So it's about time. I like that there's some new stuff in here. And I know that some people are going to push back, but I think that really when you see the team in action wearing them, I think you'll feel different.
Yeah.
Because here's the other thing that you should look at. Going forward, if they end up being good in these uniforms, you are going to remember these uniforms for maybe the best era in team history. I will make a comparison that is not a Houston-related one, but for those who like the Astros, these orange and blue uniforms that they have been wearing that are closer to the Colt 45 colors at the very beginning, and I guess the Astros colors way back in the day, those uniforms are going to be associated with the dynasty run. The Boston reference I was about to make, the Patriots had the coolest uniforms in the NFL. They had the Minuteman snapping a football. They had the red jerseys. They had a white helmet. It looked sharp, but they stunk while they wore them. They got rid of them. They moved to this other look where it's like a flying Elvis on the side. I don't think it looks great. Mm-hmm. I don't. But I associate that look with winning.
Yeah. And that's part of what the big picture was for the Texans is I think it was time for a rebrand. And I don't think they anticipated the team having this much success in the first year of D'Amico Ryans and C.J. Stroud. And that's part of the reason why the jersey was coming. The jersey was to try, in my opinion, to remove some of the stench of what was the past. Of even when you think back to Matt Schaub and only winning playoff games against backup quarterbacks and never being to an AFC title game and the Jackie Easterby era. Like the new uniforms, to me, was like it's a new era of Texans football, and then C.J. Stroud was supposed to be very good in them. By the time they debuted, he happened to be very good in them before. I do love this new Houston Texans attitude.
They were working on this before they even had Stroud.
Yeah,
this is something that they had a meeting with us that began. I want to say it was like 2-3 weeks after Nick Caserio's awkward press conference where the McNairs were sitting right in front of us and just letting Caserio take all the shrapnel for the last couple of years. Everyone was asking him hostile questions. Why'd you fire another black head coach? What the hell's going on here? And then they had that. So they've been thinking about this for a while. The fun thing that they did wasn't quite as fun. It sounded like it would be cooler before the execution.
Yes.
Because they made a big deal about how they went around basically the NFL to try and get some version of that light blue as part of the unis.
Yeah.
And the Titans threw up a huge pissy fit about it.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
Because that's the only thing that the Titans have of value as far as intellectual property goes. Like, that's legitimately it. The logo that they got rid of because everyone in Nashville hated that they did not change their name when they moved here to something original, and then they settled on the Titans because they're unoriginal losers.
Yeah.
Which was alliteration was really like the reason that they became the Tennessee Titans.
That's so stupid.
The Adams family, very well known for good planning.
No. But I love... I'm guessing, like you, that the Texans just love themselves. This photo of Cal McNair
with
his big-ass dog is great.
The Texans think they're hot bleep right now.
Yes.
And, I mean, guess what? The Astros are so bad that it's like you showed up to school after one summer away, and you're wearing the coolest clothes possible.
Yeah, you went shopping for the first time.
You're in better shape.
Mm-hmm.
You got a better hairdo, and the previous cool kid has a torn ACL, is in a wheelchair, a little acne. Now, long school year.
So you have to see how it plays out.
I mean, theoretically, the new cool kid could get stuffed in a locker, you know.
And be called a fraud.
After first period,
uh-huh.
You know, just gets a super atomic wedgie and hung up by a hook. Somewhere.
Ever happened to you?
No, thank God.
Yeah, that'd be awful. Never happened to me either.
No, people were scared of me. But
that's a
story for another day. Anyway,
were they scared of you or like your sister was older than you?
No, so they were scared of me.
Okay,
they were it's because I was a little psychopath in sixth grade.
Gotcha.
We've done a lot of work since then. You know, we've done a lot of therapy, things like that. But to bring it back, yeah, the Astros. I mean, theoretically, they're going to be back to being the Astros. Or they might never be the Astros again. And theoretically, yeah, the Texans could be exposed as fraud, and O'Doyle's going to put a bunch of cow turds in the locker. O'Doyle rules. You know, it's going to roll all over their feet.
I love the O'Doyles. They're such a great part of that movie.
They really are. Billy Madison is my favorite Adam Sandler movie.
I do love Billy Madison. I really love Happy Gilmore.
Happy Gilmore is good, and it's probably a better movie, but Billy Madison made me laugh in ways where when I first watched that movie, I think I was 9 years old. It's the hardest I've ever laughed at anything in my life.
Big Daddy, pro or anti?
Big Daddy's good. Big Daddy, yeah. But Big Daddy's not as funny.
No, it's not.
It's a good movie, but it's not quite as funny.
Yeah, I think it's the most up and down Adam Sandler movie in terms of if people like it or not. At least of that foursome, including Waterboy, Billy Madison is the one that's usually the bottom of most people's list. It's at the bottom of mine of those four movies that we've named, but it's still pretty good. I mean, when he teaches him how to write his name, it's one of the great scenes in movie history. I'm going to teach my son to write his name like that. Except we don't have snow in Texas, so I guess we'll have to fly back to Chicago for a weekend to do that.
One of the great scenes in movie history?
Not really, but I just think it's funny.
I don't know. No. Stand on your take, sir.
No, I just think the scene made me laugh like an immature child the first time I saw it.
Look at you. You're acting like you've gone full media just a couple of months on the show. You're all of a sudden like, yeah, I was very puerile, you know, very puerile of me to laugh at such hooliganery.
No, I think it's great. Are you excited for Happy Gilmore 2?
They're making a sequel. Is that confirmed?
Yeah, Adam Sandler has confirmed.
I thought Sandler pushed back because he was getting annoyed that the guy who plays Shooter McGavin, who has not exactly been winning in the game of life of late, was kind of pushing that movie as being about to come out.
No, he told Dan Patrick like 2 weeks ago that they're making it.
Oh, it is happening.
Yeah, I hope they're on the senior tour. That's all I know. I think that would make it funnier. All right, there are two Astros issues we haven't really focused on in the last couple of days as they come back into action tonight. Plus the Nationals, we just found out. I just saw this on the social media world that they're going to troll the Astros this weekend because they can, because it's 5 years since they beat the Astros in the World Series. So that's happening tonight. But some of the issues that are going on with the Astros we have not touched on. We'll get to that next here on Glotton George on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Gallant and George on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. So, yeah, the Nationals are going to take this opportunity to relish in the past and give away a bunch of stuff this weekend. They're going to give away rings on Saturday. It makes me sad. They're going to do...
Well, why does it make you sad? They suck now. This is all they can do.
I know.
They're not good. They're not going to be good ever again.
It's like Friday Night Fireworks 2019 World Champion music. What the hell is that?
They had their golden generation where they get Steven Strasburg, they get Bryce Harper. Obviously, those guys didn't really get them over the finish line. They had 21-year-old Juan Soto. It's over for them.
It's very over.
Let them have it.
Yeah, that's true. But I think it's the one series that, like the Twitch said... That's the worst part of this run.
It's like when the Carthaginians invaded Rome, and they got pretty far.
Mm-hmm.
Guess who doesn't exist anymore? Carthage. Guess who does? Rome. Italians won't let us forget about it.
All right. I like the reference. I wasn't expecting that one, but you never know what I'm going to get from you. There's two
issues.
Good
hardcore history podcast. Unicorns, baby.
There are two Astros issues that we have not really talked about. The first one you brought up on the rundown today, which is just the walks.
I was surprised to see this today.
Yeah. So they have a 10.9 walk rate. It's second only to the Marlins, who. You put who really suck on here,
but don't
the Astros also really suck right now?
You definitely could make that case, Joe. The Marlins are off to a historically last year's A's bad start, though.
Yeah, they are.
They're really bad. It isn't surprising that these walk numbers are high, given that you've had a couple of games where the starters have just been dreadful to open things up.
Mm-hmm.
But also some of these walks are coming in the bullpen, too.
They are, and they're coming at unfortunate times. Really, like Josh Hader, you know, his two big outings that were issues were started with walks, and then things kind of fell apart for him. And Chandler put out an interesting piece on Josh Hader that we're going to get into in the 2 o'clock hour today, just about his struggles and what they really mean. But yeah, the walks are definitely a problem. We got the most negative text ever here from the 409. If JV gets bounced early tonight, where's the panic meter going to be? That'll put us 9 games under .500. Well, even if he gets bounced early, KJ, it doesn't mean that they will lose.
Correct.
Because they won the Blair Henley game.
That's true.
So you never know.
Sometimes the offense carries the pitching for this team. It would be nice if they did it, you know, a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But, guys, tonight's the first game of the season. You're looking at it all wrong. They're 0-0, right? Like, they just played the pre-playoffs. Iron sharpens iron. You play a bunch of plus 500 teams. This was their preseason, okay? And they didn't take it as seriously as they probably needed to. But they know where they're going to be at the end of the year in the ALCS. So everybody who's looking at this and saying, oh, my God, the Astros are 6-14. You got to find a way in your mind to gaslight yourself into believing that it's all uphill from here. And that's how you do it. Today's the first game of the season. Today's the greatest day of your life. Today's the greatest game for the Houston Astros of the 2024 season. I'm Tony Robbins, bitch.
If Justin Verlander gets bounced early today, the panic meter is going to be at an 8. For a lot of people.
You're going to put it at, are you going to put it at an 8?
6.
I'm going to put it at a 0.3 because they'll be 0-1 to start the season.
How many times can we say this?
I'm going to keep saying
How many times can it be as long as I
can. I'm going to say it until somebody gets a battering ram, blasts their way through the front door, assuming they figure out which of our front doors is the front door, which is sometimes an issue here at our address. And they're going to have to get me out of the studio. There's a lock in here. I'd be able to stay in here for a little bit. No food,
dude,
no water.
Cook in here.
Yeah, no toilets either.
Maybe we turn the light off, we'd be okay, but we couldn't stay in here very long.
Right.
Plus, they could come through the window.
Yeah, they could get through that window, but we could have Austin in for Sean, or he could lock the door. We'd be okay.
Yeah, we'd be okay.
So, listen, I'll keep the propaganda going. How many times have I had to rally you people when you doubt this team?
A lot of times, I imagine.
I actually have done it a surprising amount of time. And this is not my team by blood. This is the bandwagon I joined. And here I always am telling you guys, relax.
Yeah, but
from game 6 of the 2017 ALCS on.
I like Junior Bronco's take here. Astros sucking on purpose just to make the comeback even more epic.
Exactly. They're bored. They're bored. They're like a cat. They're playing with their food, which is all of baseball.
Mm. Chandler Rome also had this article today, which he highlights some numbers that are causing the Astros issue. And this one was interesting to me because as we talked about the lineup and the success that it has had with that has not had with runners in scoring position, there has still been, you know, Alvarez, Tucker, Altuve, these guys have still kind of been, they've been very good for the most part this year. So the Astros have a 506 OPS in late close situations.
Oh my God.
A late close situation.
That's so bad.
Yeah. Is defined as a plate appearance in the seventh inning or later with the batter's team tied, ahead by a run, or having the tying run at least on deck. The Houston Astros have taken 104 of these this season at bats. They're hitting .217.
Well, it's better than Jose Abreu.
The OPS is .506. The league average for this the OPS at this time is .679. Of the 21 hits the Astros have in these 104 plate appearances, they're all singles except for two, both coming from Jose Altuve. And Alvarez is 1-for-11 in these situations. Alex Bregman is 2-for-11 in these situations. Kyle Tucker is 2-for-8 in these situations. Mm. And this is where
it's not good.
I go back to the Jeremy Booth argument a little bit, where I do disagree with him about lineup construction. Is lineup construction doesn't fix that. That's just your best players having 30 play appearances right there. That math's correct, I think, between Alvarez, Bregman, and Tucker, and being very poor in important moments. Like that was a shocking, jarring when I read those things. I was just like, oh, that's way worse than I thought it would be in late game situations.
Well, hey, spin zone, Joe.
Spin it.
that OPS is twice as much as Jose Abreu's OPS.
Mm-hmm.
That 506, is that what you said?
Mm-hmm.
That is amazingly bad. Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. It's so bad. You can't believe it.
That's because it's
flukish.
It feels...
Spin zone.
It feels like it's not real still. Like, that's where it's not just a spin zone, Paul. It's not going to be like this forever. It's not. The Astros are going to be much better in this situation.
They can't be worse.
This season.
Legitimately.
They at some point...
Unless they're Jose Abreu.
They're going to figure it out. They are going to be clutch again in these moments. The question is how big of a hole are they going to be in when they figure it out? Like, that's really the question. Because they're going to... That stuff's not going to stick around.
Starts tonight, man. This starts tonight. The 8-game winning streak begins tonight and ends in Mexico City.
Can't wait.
Much like Hernando Cortez once conquered Tecnotitlan and took Montezuma out.
Dude, I got your first history lesson. I don't know anything about this one.
You don't know about the Mexico City is built on top of the former Aztec capital. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, but it's like Tecnotitlan.
Okay.
And that's,
I'm going to take your word for this.
The second conquering of Mexico City is going to be by the Houston Astros because the Americans never could. They tried to invade a couple of times and it went very horribly.
Gotcha. Okay.
Do you like the history lessons you're getting today? I don't think you do. I don't think you like history.
I like the first one just because I know about it. This one, I'm just like, I guess I gotta trust you on it. But you're a history buff, so I assume you'd tell me the truth.
I'm a little too obsessed with that. Dan Carlin's Hardcore History Podcasts, many hours of my life. I've been on road trips. I listened to that one.
Have you watched World War II in color yet?
Multiple times, in fact. I've watched all... There's like three different documentaries that are literally the same thing.
Uh-huh.
It's World War II in Kalauer, you know?
Do you have like a go-to...
World War II doc?
No.
Not really.
Like historical reference that like if there's a documentary that comes out, it's a must-see.
Oh, anything by Ken Burns.
Okay.
I will watch anything by Ken Burns.
I'm thinking more like specific topic-wise. I'm fascinated by JFK. And, like, what happened. So anytime
there's I bet you're fascinated by me, boy.
Anytime there's a JFK documentary.
You know what I was doing with my brother, with Marilyn Monroe?
I don't want to know. I don't want to know what he was doing, Paul.
There's a tower that a lot of people compared it to.
All right. Yesterday, one of the...
Nothing to fear but me in a room with an intern.
I think it was Vandalorian. I think it was on Twitter. Was the first with this news that Jeff Bagwell... back of the baseball card captain over there,
mm-hmm.
was in Sugar Land. And then coincidentally...
Well, our guy, Mario...
Joey. Joseph. Loperfido.
Right, that's saved by his confirmed Catholic name. Thank you.
Mario Joseph Loperfido was not in the lineup. Now, it was just a regular day off, but is there something to this? Are they meeting with Joey Loperfido? Are they trying to figure out how ready he is to be first base? Is the end of the Jose Abreu era upon us? We can only hope. That's next year... On Gallant and George on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Before we do that, I want to tell you about my friends at LaBerge, Lake Charles. Paul, Sean, myself will be there next Wednesday. Great place to go and bet if you want to bet on your Texas teams. If this Texans jersey's got you hyped up, over 9.5 wins this season, LaBerge, Lake Charles, that's the place to make your bet. They have 19 betting kiosks, TVs all over the place. Great food, blackjack, roulette inside the sports book. Obviously, while you're there, they have a massive casino, great restaurants inside LaBerge as well. And when you're in Louisiana, because you can't do it yet here in Texas, you can download the ESPN Bet app all through Penn Entertainment, which owns LaBerge. Easy to bet, awesome app. I just downloaded it when I was there on my last day there because I didn't do it right away. Major mistake. Being able to bet on sports on your phone is a gift and a curse at the same time. But when you want to bet on your Texas teams, make sure you go to LaBerge Lake Charles. And before you do, download the Penn Play app and you can win up to $2,000 in Penn Play cash.
You're back with Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul and Joe.
All right, so yesterday, first where we got out of in Sugarland was that Jeff Bagwell and other minor league scouts were there, of course. That second part's not surprising, but Baggy was there, which is interesting because now that what we know about this committee that the Houston Astros have, it does seem to be led by Jeff Bagwell. He seems to be number one of who has Jim Crane's ear the most, I would say. But he's in Sugar Land yesterday. Joey Loperfido was not in the lineup, so it wasn't exactly a full scout of Loperfido. But just where the Astros are at, what we talked about yesterday, where they've used 23 arms this season. Last year, they only used 24. We've seen multiple guys go up and down, including Spencer Arrighetti and Forrest Whitley. And really, the two guys that I would be most intrigued by right now are Joey Loperfido and then Pedro Leon, who's had a very good start to his minor league season. I'm not sure if it's continued, but he at least at one point was doing very, very well. So I don't know. You think they're down there? They're scouting these guys and trying to figure out who's coming up, or is this much to do about nothing?
Well, no offense to the fine people of Sugar Land, but what reason would Jeff Bagwell have to go there?
Besides to scout the team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And especially to specifically look at any possible solution so that they can clean up this Jose Abreu mess.
Mm-hmm.
I doubt that they'll DFA him. I know a lot of people want that. They have to find a way to, one, find a replacement, and two, quietly put him on injured list.
Yeah.
Something like that, and say, listen, we're doing this for you. Like, you're dealing with something. Wink, wink.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want you to look bad here. We care about you. I wonder if that is something that's at least in the back of their mind if Abreu doesn't turn things around. I'm not expecting Abreu to turn things around this time around. I know that as the season progressed last year that there were some moments, specifically the playoffs mm-hmm. and the end of the year, where he actually was good. But it just doesn't feel like that's going to be the case this year. And when you hear him talking about his confidence through a translator, and the translator saying that, I mean, if you've been watching that Shogun show, the translator might from time to time clean things up a little bit.
Yeah, we know that from Shohei Ohtani.
Can't trust
the translator.
That nothing against the translator.
Can't trust him now.
But I'm assuming that if he's talking about his confidence and that's making it through translation, that it's not good.
Yeah, I'll be honest though. I don't know why, Paul. I got this sneaky wonder if they're looking at Pedro Leon more than they are at Joey Loperfido. He's hitting .324 this year.
Yeah, he just won the Pacific Coast Player of the Week award.
Like, if you think back to when he was signed,
he just strikes out a lot.
Yeah, like you think back to when he was signed by the Houston Astros, it was the biggest international deal the franchise had ever given out. And there was this idea that he was going to skyrocket through the minor league system and make it up to the Houston Astros. I think at one point it was believed that he was going to be maybe your Jeremy Peña, because second baseman, then they started putting him in the outfield a little bit, kind of just going everywhere. So I just doubt that they're actually going to make a move on Jose Abreu. I don't know why. There's really no reason to replace Chaz or Jake Myers, but to me, it seems way more likely that they would be bringing in another outfielder to play on a consistent basis and have Yordan Alvarez DH more than Joey Loperfido be the first baseman.
There's really only one position that you look at. There's enough depth in the outfield where it doesn't make sense for them to bring somebody up. Part of that has to do with Mauricio Dubon. If there's an injury, that of course would change. But yeah, right now, there is legitimately only one hole on your roster. It's the guy who has 4 hits and 2 errors, Jose Abreu.
Yeah, and those errors are bad. Mm-hmm. I mean, even think back to the no-hitter, that play at the end of the game. He made that way more challenging than he needed to. It was not a good-looking play, I would say, the least. So I don't think this means Loperfido's coming. I don't even know if it means Pedro Leon or...
Yeah.
Or you could be there evaluating pitchers, I guess. Like, you never know.
Anything's possible.
Anything's possible. But it is of note that, like, I just can't imagine that he's there for no reason.
If you're putting things together, reading between the lines, reading the tea leaves, et cetera, et cetera. There is literally no reason for him to be down there unless he is getting a look at Joey Loperfido and specifically maybe talking to him about his confidence playing first base.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing with Loperfido is he's played first base, but is he a first baseman?
Yeah, exactly. Like it's a sample size.
Right. It seems like right now he's positionless and he's played a couple of different things. So Jeff Bagwell, as a former first baseman, I'm sure, has probably some insight to share with him. For all that we say about him maybe as a scout, I would be if yes. I were a minor league baseball player, someone who would want to hear what Jeff Bagwell has to say.
Yeah, it is the one thing where if it's he was just there to help teach Joey Loprofito how to be a better first baseman, so maybe he could be a Jose Abreu replacement.
That's where I want his consultation.
That sounds great.
I'd rather Bagwell be a coach than an evaluator.
Yeah.
I'm sure as a coach, there are things that he can offer, given that he's one of the best hitters in the history of the game.
Yeah, it was that would be nice to see instead of calling the shots on Jose Abreu. Still why I don't think they'll ever replace him, because I don't think Jeff Bagwell and Jim Crane will admit they're wrong. At least until this offseason. This offseason is when they could probably move on, but I really don't think they're going to do it in season.
Yeah, man, I don't even really know if you can. It's still eating $15
million. From the 713, how late into the season was the infamous Tombstone article written by the Chronicle? I think it's right around the corner. I don't remember exactly.
They had a couple of those, huh? You had the Choke City.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly when that article, when that came out, but it was early.
2005. This was June 1st, 2005.
Ooh, we still got a while
to
go.
There's an article about it from Jake Kaplan, who was the previous Astros writer for The Athletic. Yeah, June 1st, 2005, the Houston Chronicle pronounces the 19-32 Astros season to be dead. Thoughtfully provided a tombstone with a couple of flowers on the top of it, and obviously things turned around from that point on. Was who put this in? I'm looking for who. Get this. It was the brainchild of the sports editor at the time, Fred Fowler.
Oh, was it really?
I'm assuming that this is
interesting.
This is our Fred Fowler.
Yeah. It would be. Yeah, that timeline matches up from what career.
Right, 2005.
I didn't know that.
Friday. Tombstone's out on Friday.
Is it time for the tombstone? I know that's so fun. That's like the one thing you see. Like, can someone put out the tombstone article again for 2024? I guess we have to wait till June 1st, or until they're 13 games under 500, whichever comes first, to when we put out the tombstone. I think we'll have to do our own. We'll make a YouTube video.
What would Fred do? Should we do some peyote, ayahuasca? Maybe we can talk to Fred in the Great Beyond. Bring a couple of beers.
I think it sounds like a great idea.
Some darts. We'll rip some darts with them.
Play some poker.
Fred, what should we do?
I think that sounds like a great idea.
Tell us, Fred.
I guess we're on the horizon of that. If it needs to be, I wouldn't be surprised if the Chronicle tried to run that back this year as a bit.
Yeah, bring it back.
I mean, it worked once.
Look, Houston sports
worked.
The Houston sports section of the Chronicle,
yeah,
has done this multiple times.
Yeah,
like you have Choke City as well.
You do.
It clearly works.
Yeah, but
they're like, two for two. I don't think there's been any other ones out here. I think the only two times.
Does it have to come from the Chronicle?
Let me see. I gotta confirm. Well,
like, could this be like? Could the Athletic do this? Could we do this and get credit for it? Because I would say, like, I would like to get, credit for the Astros turnaround if we could somehow pull that off.
I agree.
Statistically, I think that would be a great brand for you and I.
I think it would be, too. Yeah, Chokes. And by the way, this all happened, like, the same month. That was May 12th. So, basically, here's what needs to happen. Once we get to, I guess, May 1st, anything in May we can use as voodoo magic to potentially turn things around.
All right. Other things going on in the world. Tomorrow's 420. You have thoughts?
No, man. I don't know what you're talking about.
You know, I've never really partaken in 420.
Loser. That's your right.
No, let me rephrase that.
I've never partaken.
I smoke occasionally.
Narc. Hey, there could be a narc listening, Joe.
Yeah, clearly there is. I don't care. I just never was like, oh, it's 420. Gotta do it. Like, God, it's just a day. Like, if you're going to do it, it doesn't have to be that day. Also, that's like the day the cops were out in college. Like, they were looking for it back in the day. You got to be smarter than that. You got to be more intelligent. It's like they know it's coming. It's like the people who, like, are...
They don't care about it anymore.
Depends on where you are.
Not in Houston.
No, yeah, they don't anymore.
Houston, they used to, slap you pretty hard for it. But now, they don't care. The cops barely respond to, like a Dominican president's son getting shot up by like an AK-47 at a gas station. Do you think they're going to respond to someone puffing a J?
I think it's way more likely to respond to that than the first thing you said. Little things versus important things. Yes, that's how often
I would like them to focus on that, but I don't even think they're focusing on that, for God's sake. So,
yeah. So
I don't know, man. I think you're going to be in the clear.
420 is for little teenage potheads, and that's about
it. Shut up! Don't tell me who I am.
I did see, like, if you care about wrestling, there's this wrestler, RVD. He's very infamous for partaking, and he's getting some kind of special match for 420. So you got to celebrate sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, if you partake, you partake. Congratulations.
Congratulations to you. You're a cool guy.
And maybe one day, like, the legalization of gambling, they'll get their heads out of their asses and legalize that, too, and just move into the 21st century. That'd be nice.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Does CJ Stroud deserve to have massive input on the Texans draft process like the Ravens are giving Lamar Jackson? That's next year on Gallant and George on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.